Welcome to Software Gone Wild. Today on a field trip in Central Europe. We are sitting in a nice environment in an office in Slovenia. If you don't know where that is, go to Wikipedia and look it up immediately. Okay? Got it? Good. So we are sitting in Slovenia, and with me today are two wizards working on something called Flip IT, which has nothing to do with a camcorder of a similar name that was botched by a certain five-letter company. The reason we're talking about Flip IT is because it's one of those orchestration solutions that actually works in real life. Before going into the technical details, my first guest is Gordon Bujicevic. Got it right?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Who is the marketing guru behind Flip IT. Gordon, what is this thing all about?
Okay, thank you. The Flip IT is a software. It's an orchestration tool for cloud. It comprises an engine and a user interface. It's able to provision and manage through a simple web interface creation of user seats concerning information and communication technologies. So what our software does is creates a virtual desktop. It adds application on the desktops like Office, like email, CRM, or similar local banking application, and so on. It also configures network, so creating VRFs on the data center infrastructure. It provides a voice as well. It configures Cisco IP telephony, so it's sort of an IP-centric-like product. And on top of it, it's multi-tenant, so you can have many companies residing on a single infrastructure in your data center. So you can offer the product to the end users from a single infrastructure.
And we also have a technical guru with us, Mitya. Would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Mitya Bzinshek. People in the US usually call me Mitch. My main field of work are Microsoft and VMware technologies. Primarily, it's VDI and vSphere. And Microsoft, I have to know because, you know, every enterprise that runs on Microsoft right now, so I do quite a lot of also Exchange and Hyper-V. But I started as a software developer in the 90s, writing Clipper apps for a home company, then went through all of the client server and web app periods. And now I'm here helping design and architect cloud apps like Flip IT.
So you just dated yourself. You should never mention Clipper apps. So what brought you to this brave new SDN world?
Well, actually, I started at NIL as a student. I helped with our, let's say, cloud monitoring solution we have at NIL. So we have a solution that does monitoring as a service for all of our customers. And I started writing PHP and Perl apps there. And then, you know, at NIL, the company's focus shifted a lot more towards the cloud. So people came up with this whole Flip IT concept. And since I was doing pretty well in the NIL monitor team, I got upgraded to doing stuff with Flip IT.
So to doing the interesting stuff.
Yeah. So I got to learn about networking, which I didn't do a lot before. So I learned Cisco IOS, how to configure an ASA, you know, all of that stuff. So now, you know, I can also do, besides the system engineering things like virtualization and Microsoft, if I have to configure a VPN tunnel, I can also do that, just not to bother and wait for a bunch of folks to do it for me.
That sounded almost like semi-hate toward the networking engineers. Let's not go down that route. Anyway, I do have a totally unrelated question for you. In these days, we are discussing a lot about networking engineers becoming programmers and how necessary that is and so on and so on. And of course, people discussing whether that's hard or not or what should you do and so on. You took the other way. So you were a programmer and you became a networking engineer.
Okay.
What are the steps a programmer should take to become fluent in networking, and how hard was it for you?
I never had the real distinction of a programmer and networking system engineer. For me, you know, it's like science. You have to know all trades. So for me, it's not difficult to program, And also it's not difficult to configure stuff. So for me, it was natural. There was a need. I like the technology. So for me, it's not a problem. And even now, you know, I help sometimes with programming. It's not a problem for me. So, I mean, in the old days, I think, let's say the 80s and 70s, you know, there was not a distinction between network engineers and programmers. You know, you had to know all of the trade. I'm the kind of guy who doesn't really like to put myself in a single box. So, yeah, that's what I like the technology, so that's what I like to do.
So now the programmers, you've heard what you have to do. Now let's move forward with the Flip IT topics. So you said it's an orchestration software. Orchestration software is always about orchestrating some service.
True.
So which service is this orchestration software orchestrating?
It's orchestrating ICT services. So,
okay.
Yeah, information and communication. So it's VDI, so desktop as a service, then software, software as a service, voice as a service, and that's it basically.
Yeah, so you can also do virtual servers. So you can go to the portal and you can order virtual servers like, you know, from AWS or Microsoft Azure. When talking about Flip IT, the basic concept is just to have one portal to order all IT services from, and it is primarily user-centric. So very user-friendly, that's what we strive to.
So effectively, it's something that allows me to offer any IT services to my clients, be it virtual desktop or a virtual server or an IP phone or thin app or email or web service or any combination of the above.
Yeah, exactly. The customer doesn't have to go to different companies, one to buy the applications, the other to get connectivity from, another company to get IP telephony, some company which does ERP support. So you just go to one cloud provider which provides you with everything.
Okay, so who would be a typical customer for this software? Who would buy it and how would they use it?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so typical customer is other managed service provider or an enterprise. So basically, our business model is through the reseller network, of course. So we found this as a best solution in order to scale. If you want to use our software as a cloud management tool, as being a service provided to local small and medium businesses, then you would need to have your data center. And we would install the software on top of the existing data center. Also, you might be a system integrator that has a big enterprise customer, and this enterprise customer is willing to move from traditional IT to cloud-based, but still they want to have their own private cloud, either on-premise or hosted in someone's data center. Then we install our software to use it as an IT management tool. So it's either one of those two. It's typically so resellers that are our end customers.
So in one case, the service provider would be offering, let's call it IT as a service, mm-hmm. to whatever their end users are. And this would probably be mostly small and medium business, right?
Yeah. We wanted to bring the quality of enterprise level service to the small and medium businesses at affordable price, of course. So well, it sounds great, but it's not so easy to do. But we somehow managed, you know, to find a sweet spot and to be able to offer that kind of product to the market.
And on the other hand, you're saying an enterprise customer might use this to provision their internal cloud services.
Yeah, it's a bit different, but why is it also good? You know, typically in an enterprise, you would have local IT that does all the necessary work to provide, you know, the computing. So usually laptops and desktops, then applications running on top of that, so installing of all of that, telephony, so bringing the phone on the location, connecting and configuring the routers, the switches, access points and stuff like that. So all of that is usually work of technicians in such an enterprise. With usage of Flip IT as orchestration engine, you can much faster do the deployments. So from adding a new desktop to applying applications on it, configuring the routers and switches and access points. So our engine creates the configuration for all the CPE devices So you don't have to worry about, you know, mistyping something. Basically, you just use the generated configurations and upload them to the device. And for the managers of IT, so for your chief information officer, at every moment through the user interface, through the portal, you can see how much each department is using, how much each user is consuming of the IT, of the licenses, or for the software, for the voice, and so on. And in the end, you can see how much the whole company is costing from the IT perspective. Why is that good? The good thing is because in the end, you can show to the CFO and CEO why and how much you need to spend on IT. It's not anymore a black hole where you just need, you know, endless amounts of money, but you know exactly how much one seat in one department will cost. And, you know, when business plans next year to expand and hire 10 more people, IT can say, this is exact amount of money we need from the IT perspective for 10 new people. Or the other way around, you know, with crisis being very, very bad the last couple of years, you have to shrink, you know, so easily you can also deprovision all the resources that you provide.
So this sounds like magic.
Yeah.
So there must be a lot of orchestration behind the scenes. So what are all the things that you are orchestrating?
The first thing we started from were virtual desktops. So we wanted to provide virtual desktops to the end users and in a multi-tenant fashion. Then, of course, just with virtual desktops, you know, they're not very useful without the applications. So the next step was adding an application store to the self-service portal. The end user can choose which applications they want to have installed on their desktop, very much like Google Play Store or Apple App Store. The next thing was IP telephony. In the company, every user has some kind of a phone. So, of course, we had to add the module for automating the IP telephony part. Then email, that was pretty natural. So you can Flip IT support provisioning of email either on hosted Exchange or on Zimbra. Also, as Gordon mentioned, networking. So for example, when someone wants to provision a completely new branch office, they just go to the portal and add the branch office, and all the configuration is generated automatically from pre-existing templates and pushed to the devices also. Then let's see what else is there. Virtual servers, that's another obvious one. So if you have some application backend you have to provision, of course you need virtual servers. Let's see what else is there. I think pretty much that's about it.
So if we start from where you started, you said VDI in multi-tenant environment.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means that in one way or another, the desktops of Department A or Customer A should not be able to talk to desktops of Department B.
Exactly.
So how did you solve that?
Well, we did this design in 2008. So what we did then was, it was very simple. On layer 2, we separated the customers with VLANs. So each customer gets a set of dedicated VLANs, and also they get their own IPsec tunnel configuration, and they are routed to their own VRF. So that's how we did it then. Then we expanded this configuration, and for some customers, they also, the bigger ones, they also get a dedicated context on the firewall, so you can do more configuration for those kind of customers which have different addressing, different routing needs, all of that.
Talking about individual customers, now that you mentioned IPsec.
Yeah.
So the customer is sitting in his remote office somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that remote office obviously needs internet connectivity and it needs a router. Are you supplying the router? So who is supplying the router? Let's start there.
Yeah, the one that owns the end user basically supplies the router. So how it works? So we see ourselves here as independent software vendor. You know, so this is something that runs, our software runs on the data center, and the users are either valued resellers or the end customers themselves. So the end customer can create a new location, and once it creates a new location, a new request is generated that goes to the valued reseller. The reseller then provides the router to the customer location. Either it ships it, pre-configured already, or just basically go to the location, connect the wiring, and you know, makes it ready to work. Now, usually there is not just a router, but a switch as well, you know, to be able to connect more devices. So yeah, the value-added reseller is the answer here.
But I mean, in general, for very small offices, you wouldn't, if they're not so much concerned about security and don't have any network printers and things like that, just to access the virtual desktop and run the apps, you don't need any VPN connection. So that runs over SSL connection, and you know, you can access your desktop from any device. You need usually two-factor authentication to do that, but the router is not a requirement for all.
Yeah, services. That's a good point. For small locations, you basically use it as a remote worker, you know, so as someone that's always on the road, you know, so you can connect your desktops no matter where you are, as long as you have internet connectivity. So we are talking about cloud service here, and this is a must.
On the other hand, if I want to have, like, double quote, centralized printer that belongs to a number of employees that share it, then obviously you have to, the request for the printing come from the VDI, but the printer is in the remote office, so you need an IPsec tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the biggest requirement for the IPsec, is because of the printer. And also the IP telephony. At this moment, we use a Cisco IP telephony, and this also requires a VPN connection. So if the user has a Cisco IP phone sitting on their desk, a VPN connection will be needed.
Because the phone connects to the call manager.
Yeah. So the phone connects to the call manager directly for signaling, and you know, we cannot have this exposed to the public internet. It's just not safe. It's not something.
Obviously. So on every IPsec connection, you need a number of parameters. Now I understand how you configure the remote end, because you pre-configure the whole configuration. You just tell the operator or whoever it is to put that on the router before it's shipped. Mm-hmm. So the remote end is prepared.
Yeah.
On the central side, you need VPN termination. Mm-hmm. And that's usually also has to be configured in one way or another for every remote endpoint. So exactly. How do you handle the configuration of the VPN concentrator?
What we have is a template engine built in. Based out of this template engine, for every branch office that's added or every customer that's added, a network configuration is generated. So here we are talking about Cisco iOS, Cisco ASA devices. And as you know, the only way to configure those most of the time is just text-based CLI configuration. So we just generate this network configuration and push it to the devices directly. By the way, we've been doing that with our remote labs for like forever. And, you know, it's just something that we took from an existing product and put it into Flip IT. So we've been doing network orchestration, you know, quite some time already.
So effectively, you already had a solution and you said, well, that works well enough, so we can take that solution and reapply it in this new environment to solve this new particular problem.
Exactly.
Now, when you try to sell this to your customers, how many of them say, we don't trust the automation, we don't want to do that manually?
I remember one particular customer saying this. It was really weird. They say that automation can break things, can cause services to stop working. I mean, for me, it was really silly, because I look at automation as something which helps me not making those mistakes. So, for example, if you have a bunch of people configuring stuff manually, they're all humans. At one point, they will make a mistake. If you have automation, you know, it's a machine. It does the same thing every time. So it's programmed to do that. That's what computers are for. So I told them, you know, automation is better than manual labor, but they didn't quite get that, I think.
And this is just in making mistakes or not, you know. So what about the time spent? You know, so look at how much it took us when we started to offer the product on the market. Our automation was nowhere, you know. 6 years ago, when we started our cloud, it was done manually as well. It took ages, you know, to do this. You know, with automation, it's much shorter time as well.
I mean, what we did, basically, I was doing this at the start. So we had like 40-page manual on how to set up a new customer. And it said, go to the ASA, configure that and that, watch out to get all the IPs right, check if it doesn't interfere with other customers. Then you had to deploy virtual servers, have the naming right, and then configure those virtual servers, configure Active Directory, configure VDI for them, configure Cisco Call Manager. That was the most terrible part to do manually. And in the end, you know, it took me one day to provision one customer manually. But in the end, what happened, the guys took the equipment, went to the field, connected the office, and something didn't work. And then you had to spend even more time troubleshooting what the issue was, where the problem is. I mean, what usually happened is, because there were so many things to do, a multi-tenant environment is quite complex. And because there are so many things to do, you know, for sure you forgot to click to check a checkbox, or you mistyped a number or something. So, yeah, you would spend even more time troubleshooting.
So the way you approach this whole idea, if I understood correctly, is we have this great idea for this great new service, and we want to bring it on the market as soon as possible. So let's figure out how to do it technology-wise. What is it that we need? So we need VLANs, we need firewall, we need IPsec, we need VRFs, we need call manager, we need servers, we need this, and that. And then someone wrote, like you said, 40-page manual. This is everything that needs to be configured for a new customer.
Yeah.
And then slowly, as you figured out that this is exactly what you actually have to do, so you had a few customers and this recipe was shown to be working, you start automating that recipe.
Yeah, exactly. What we did in 2009, we launched this service by ourselves, just to see how it's working and get a feel how the customers work, get a feel for the infrastructure. It was an engineering approach. You know, we started with manual automation. I mean, that's not automation, it's manual configuration. So we started with manual configuration from the start in our own environment. So we set up Nil as cloud provider here in Slovenia. We installed our software, our data center, and we said, okay, let's wait for a few customers to come. Let's do it manually first, and then we'll automate all of the tasks that needed to be automated, and we'll see what the customer really needs. So we went with the approach, you know, eat your own dog food. So I think that was a good approach to start from, being a cloud provider ourselves. It's not a natural thing that Nil does, but we went with it. And yeah, we saw immediately that, you know, you cannot do a multi-tenant environment without any automation. You know, it's impossible. The configuration is so complex, you just cannot do it.
The other reservation I usually have once people understand that automation is not that bad, because as you said, it prevents mistakes, is, well, but I'm afraid of configuring my devices during the business hours because they may crash and bring down everything. So how do you cope with that problem? Or is it not a problem at all?
Well, it's not something that we would hear. I think people understand that technology enables configurations to be applied live without any downtime, and all the customers expect that. So we didn't have any issues with customers saying that needs some downtime and things like that. They don't even want to have any downtime. So, you know, they want to have 100% SLA with all the provisioning and multi-tenancy. So
the problem we had in selling is actually convincing them to move to the cloud. You know, so that's the first step. Yeah, maybe we can dwell this a bit more. You know, so basically, before we are able to sell our software, first we have to sell on the cloud. And once we have a customer that understands, you know, the consolidation is good, then now it's time for automation, then we are, you know, ready to sell. Before that, you know, until the end users are not ready to move to the cloud, nothing for us to sell here.
But just to reiterate what you just said, so you're applying all the changes to network devices, be it firewalls, switches, call managers, whatever, during the business hours.
Yeah, of course. That's what the cloud service is all about. So, I mean, people are used to that. So for me, that's natural. I mean, I don't see a problem configuring a network device, especially, you know, if you have automation behind during the day. So the other thing is, if you do manual configuration of a core switch or a core router in a multi-million dollar company, you know, that's a different story.
If I understood correctly your architecture, the one other thing you're doing is also you don't put all eggs in the same basket. So you build a pod or a rack or whatever you want to call that, and that's an isolated unit. Mm-hmm. And then as you want to grow, you just build another one sitting next to it.
Yeah. The Flip IT, it's not just software, it's also the hardware design. So we have a design which contains hardware and supports all of the services that we mentioned in this podcast. So what we have is a block for 2,500 end users. And this contains all the storage, all the computing power, networking equipment, everything that's needed for the orchestration to work. So think of it like, let's say, iPhone, where you get hardware and software in one piece. We provide the configuration, but we don't sell the hardware. If the service provider already owns some hardware, you know, we are ready to build the data center on that hardware if it provides enough power, enough horsepower to run all of the services. Then we have this built into pods. So the hardware is built into pods. So I mentioned 2,500 users, and when this pod is running out of capacity, they can just bring another pod and put the other customers, new customers on that pod.
And this can sit in the same or different data center. It doesn't have to be in the same location. So our software supports multiple infrastructures. So once you create a new company on the infrastructure, this is the moment where you choose which infrastructure you want to use.
So effectively, you have one portal into the orchestration system, but beneath it, you have multiple provisioning / controlling instances, each one controlling one pod, and they can be at different locations.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can easily use, let's say, one portal and then have data centers, let's say, all across US. And then for a company where you see by the zip code that they belong to the West Coast, you would put them into the West Coast data center. And someone else who is from New York, you would put into the East Coast data center.
Well, actually, how it works, we don't hide the pods themselves. So when the customer is added, you know, they can choose where they want to be on which pod. So it's like on Azure when you choose on which availability zone you will sit. So we don't hide this from the customers.
Oh, so the customers can just say, I want to be on the West Coast.
Yeah, exactly.
It's usually the, you know, the reseller, their trusted IT company that does that. You know, they understand this the best.
Cool. So coming back from the technical details to slightly more business-focused discussion, people would usually ask you, well, where is this thing running? Do you have any production customers?
Yeah, okay, so our first reference was, of course, our own spin-off as a service provider. So we went with our data center and offering directly to the small and medium businesses. You know, once we had this operational, like Mitya said, so this was like a proof of concept, you know, showing that it works, learning about the customers, learning about the infrastructure, and how, you know, learning about our product in the end. Then we said, okay, let's offer this to bigger service providers. So our first outer, let's say, partner or customer was Vodacom in South Africa. This was back 2009-2010, and you know, they started to offer the service to the market themselves. So the issues they had there were, you know, a bit different than we have here in Europe and that you know users have in the States. They had problems with connectivity and everything, so they had to work on that. But, you know, they recognize our product as something they need in order to be able to attack the new market. So without just being offering connectivity, voice, minutes, basically, offer something else that's also on pay-as-you-go basis. And that's why they moved into the IT as a service from the cloud. Then we did a mobile in the Middle East. And recently we did a project with Verizon in the UK. So for the UK and the European Union. In the meantime, we did several enterprise deployments, if you remember. So we can do, you know, multi-tenant or single-tenant deployments. And yeah, so these are our references at the moment. So now we are opening US market as well. So looking basically for a trusted service provider, we are talking with some of them. And we want to build the data center locally to be able to prove the concept again and to make them embrace this as their own product.
When I was looking at the market, and comparing what other people are doing to what you are doing, I wasn't really able to find a product that would be sort of the same as what you're doing in features.
Mm-hmm.
Have I missed something?
Okay, so maybe this is more Mitya's area, but let me just, you know, fire this up. Okay, so there are many software providers that do automation tools. If you start with big names like Microsoft, VMware, Cisco, and so on, they do their own products automation already. But you don't have all of this aggregated into one single portal, multi-tenant for all the services. So this is, I would say, our edge, together with the application store as well. About the competition, maybe Mitya, you're more competent there.
Yeah, well, just to touch on the automation and orchestration software market these days, there are a lot of automation orchestration tools you can find on the market. The problem with all of those is that they're pretty much generic tools. Most of the time, out of the box, they can do infrastructure as a service provisioning. When you want to do VDI or voice, you know, you have to invest in 1 year of development to build all of the connectors and the automation workflows, while with FlipIT, you get this out of the box. When looking at the other, let's say, public cloud providers, which provide a similar service, a lot of them are very specialized in one thing. That means that some of them offer just voice, while others offer just desktop as a service, others offer just infrastructure as a service. So usually they're very focused on one technology. Even if you look at Azure or AWS, they mostly deal with infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and now they are starting to have some desktop as a service. But again, this is more on the infrastructure level, so it's not complete. There is some orchestration missing in their offering. So you can get an empty virtual desktop at AWS, but again, you don't have any app store. You have to build integration with Active Directory on your own. You have to know what you're doing in AWS actually to achieve anything. With FlipIT, it's different. So a lot of those providers, they focus on one or two technologies or are very techy. You need to know with AWS, if you want to build the proper infrastructure, you have to take some time and read what it's all about, how the network is done, how the availability zones are done, all of that. So yeah, with FlipIT, that's different.
So this is our blessing and our curse as well, you know. So sometimes, you know, we come to the customers and they say, you know, but we don't need the whole plethora of, you know, the things that you offer. That's why, you know, a couple of years ago we said, okay, let's offer per parts, you know, so that basically the reseller can say, okay, I just want email, I want VDI and application store. I don't need voice, you know, so it's modular, you know, you don't have to use all the automation capabilities that we have.
So effectively, you have a whole solution, but if someone just needs three quarters of it,
yeah, they can choose modules that they want to use. Absolutely. Yes. And the pricing is accordingly.
So in Vodacom last year, they've decided they want to launch a special instance of the FlipIT portal, which will do just the voice, because they saw that they had a good market for voice. And they've decided to launch an instance of FlipIT with a different name, which does just the voice.
So the reasoning was, we see this market,
mm-hmm.
We already have the orchestration tool, we know it works, let's just take this functionality out, let's relaunch it under a different brand, and we're in business.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know if we mentioned that, the portal supports white labeling. All the tools support white labeling. So all the cloud providers and even resellers can sell this service under their own name, own colors, and own logos. It doesn't have to be Flip IT. It's, you know, usually they decide for a different name.
Yeah. Mita just came to some of the unique selling points that we, you know, that we use. The white labeling is a big one of those. So the value-added reseller can brand this portal to his end customers in his colors. So to his end customers, he looks like a managed service provider. Why is this important? Those customers trust him. And since he doesn't have such a product of his own, it's a big value to this value-added reseller to be able to present it as its own product. So that's just one of the advantages. So we tend to pick trusted service providers for hosting the data center, which is also a big advantage for those resellers. They want to know that the infrastructure that their customers reside on is something they can count on in the future. You see in the cloud lots of companies emerging and disappearing, you know, like bubbles. And this is not good for the sustainable business. And that's why, you know, value-added resellers for their customers want the best thing because they want the best thing for themselves as well.
Okay. Now, if I want to learn more about what you guys are doing, where can I find more information?
So the first best spot to start is flipitcloud.com. This is our product-related site just for our orchestration. And also you can go to nil.com as well to learn a bit more about our parent company. Yeah, and you can find the contact data there, and please send us a request and we'll give you more info.
Assuming I want to test this, do you have like a test package or a demo drive? Can I test the portal through the web interface?
Absolutely. Just ping us and we'll set it up for you. So if you're a reseller or potential customer as well, we'll create an account for you that you can play with for a period of time.
Cool. Now, Gordon, if they want to get in touch with you directly, do you blog somewhere? Do you have a Twitter handle? Anything else you're doing on the social media?
Yeah, I used to blog as part of my own initiative, but I don't anymore. So I'm too much involved with the product management of Flip IT now, but they can contact me on my company email, and I'm assuring you that I'll respond to all of them that come. So it's Gordan, Gordan, at flipitcloud.com.
And Mitya, what about you?
Unfortunately, I don't have much time to blog or to be very social in let's say in the computer world. So I have a Twitter account, so it's Techno Mitja, Techno M-I-T-J-A. You can follow me on that one. Otherwise, please visit www.flipitcloud.com and you can contact me from the contacts there.
Perfect. Thank you guys for this short talk. For those of you who just stumbled on this podcast, I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and I do have time for blogging. After all, this is my business. So you can read my SDN rants at blog.ipspace.net. And if you want to know more about SDN, go to ipspace.net/SDN, where you'll find links to this podcast and my new SDN book. And now the second book is coming out. And the links to the blog posts, and there are webinars, workshops, who knows what else. And once you figure out that there is just too much stuff and you don't know what to choose, I can give you an easy way out. It's called the subscription, which gives you everything I ever produced for a fixed price for a year. Finally, if you like this podcast, do your homework. Go to iTunes and write a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow us at podcast.ipspace.net.